Well, look at who the cat dragged in. My God. Good morning. Well, welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have two people who you know who haven't been on the show in a while, so we're glad they're here. Alan is back with us. It's been a long time, and we missed you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. It's always interesting. We went out to the West Coast, and we had a good time out there. We came back. I had a back operation, and still in some state of recovery, but it's going to be much better. So it's all great.
Great. Are you are you on a painkiller right now? Because this show could be a lot more fun if you're on painkillers.
Now, am I supposed to say, yeah, I guess I am. I have always been against taking them.
I know.
But my surgeon said, take them, because it really hurt. And it's something called oxycodone.
Yes.
And it's not the biggest thing in the world.
Oxy on the street. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, right. But it's very helpful. And, you know, that along with ice and complaining is very good.
Well, we allow you to do all three during the course of the next 90 minutes. So welcome back. Lovely to have you here. Well, here's another person who I don't think has quite as good an excuse as you do, Alan, but he has been gone for a while. We're thrilled to have him back. It's hell negotiating with your team to get you here, I have to say, but I'm glad all of the paperwork was signed and we got you here. Rich Onan, corporate attorney, and it's a thrill to have you back. We missed you.
Great to be back. Missed you guys, too.
Well, thank you.
And I am on painkillers and everything else I could find.
Good. Excellent. And our good friend Aaron Pasitti is here. Was not with you. Were here. You were not here last week.
I was not
week.
Here last
you're
week.
You're not here last week. And so we missed you. So you're back, too. So thank you very much.
No problem.
He is a professor of economics at Siena College. And we had your colleague Vera Carius Kelly on yesterday. We have you on today. So Siena in the house. So,
Siena Mafia.
Good stuff. Well, welcome all. Thank you very much for being here. A reminder to you, the listener, you can join us by simply writing us a letter. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let's get into what is happening in the world, and we begin with South Korea. Two stories that are of interest regarding this. Donald Trump moving to widen U.S. sanctions on North Korea made the announcement yesterday of widening the American sanctions on North Korea to further choke off its trade and with the outside world in what some experts described as perhaps the most sweeping set of punitive economic measures enacted by the United States in many years. A new executive order signed by Mr. Trump aimed to cut North Korea out of the international banking system while targeting its major industries and shopping. The move suggested that for now, at least, the president was still committed to applying economic pressure rather than military action, despite his vow this week to, quote, totally destroy North Korea if the United States were forced to defend its allies. Meanwhile, aren't we lucky we found out that Kim Jong-un also has access to Twitter. Yay. So he said he went back yesterday and said that he had a lot of things. I'm looking for the exact quote here as to what he called, because this is after, of course, he called President Trump called him a madman. Go ahead.
The mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire.
Yeah. Yes. Dotard.
Nice one.
Dotard.
Good word.
I had to look it up.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I had to look it up.
Because people are always in their dotage. You always read that.
Yeah. No, I hadn't, but I didn't know. But
you got to read more Jane Austen.
I didn't know. No, I don't. I didn't know how specifically and how perfect it was of a descriptor.
For some people. Perhaps.
All right, Alan, let's begin with you. What do you make of all this?
Well, you know, it comes down to a single word, right? Does anybody? I'll test you all. What's the single word?
I don't know.
Testosterone?
China.
Oh, China. Oh, yeah. I was going to go with Rich somewhere around China. There. Testosterone. I was going to use a different
now
word, but yes.
Now, we are hearing, of course, that the Chinese have turned a page and that they're going to put more pressure on North Korea, and we've heard that before. So the real question is, what secret deals, as Woodrow Wilson has said, might have been secretly arrived at with China? I've been saying all along that if we could assure them that South Korea would not be on their border, maybe we could make some kind of deal. The other thing is, they may think that Trump is really crazy and that he's capable of doing something that will be will hurt them very badly, as in a nuclear device or something of that kind. If they think that, if they really think that their great relationship with the United States, let's face it, they're making money on us, will be harmed, they might come around. So to me, China is right. Trump thanked the Chinese yesterday and said that it was great that they were coming around. But we'll see whether or not they really do.
Rich.
Do we know for a fact? I know there was the Reuters report. Do we know for a fact that China is gonna kind of voluntarily comply with that?
Or
is
by
that
no
still
means.
Up in the air?
Okay. By no means.
And I think you do have to give them some negotiating room, right? You can't make it appear like China is doing something because we decreed that it happened.
No, but I think I said that, Rich. But I have grave doubts as to whether they really mean it or not. If they think that this country or that this president, forget about the country, that this president is committed to doing something dastardly, one of my favorite words, they might just say, okay, enough is enough. We have to put this pressure on. But I agree with you. I don't think there is any indication that they're going to do it any more this time than they've done in the past. And we know they've cheated in the past.
Yeah, and Steve Mnuchin said that the American measures were not in particular targeted at Beijing. So all of the international finance and the banking and the industry restrictions about doing business with North Korea, Mnuchin kind of gave the U.S. an out by saying, well, this isn't actually aimed at China, but what is it, like 90% of North Korea's economic assistance comes from China. North Korea doesn't depend on the international financial system for loans and capital, so I don't see how this isn't directed toward China.
Okay, so let me go to a very primal base level, as you're talking about Steve Mnuchin and the Treasury and China, and I appreciate the high level of dialogue. But is there any reason when you have two world leaders of this of their capacity, and you have two world leaders of their capacity who are trading barbs back and forth like this, and you have one world leader who at the UN said, you know, we could blow them off the map, is there any reason in the world, again, this is a primal question, that we shouldn't be scared to death?
No. No, in fact, Joe, this morning on an earlier commentary, you know, I made that point. I really thought that we should be scared to death. And I said in my 76 years, I had never seen anything like it. And that, I said, included Cuba, because while it was very alarming and a lot of people thought something might happen there, it turns out, at least in retrospect, as we look at it, that you had people of both sides who really understood what the severity of the situation was. I got a letter from a guy who said, you don't know what you're talking about. They had all of these things ready to go and to kill us and all the rest. I don't think so. I think looking back, when you look at the Russian leadership at the time and you look at the United States leadership, nobody wanted that kind of nuclear confrontation. Here, I think we have something that's even scarier.
I don't think so. Because Kim Jong-un knows perfectly well that any military action either against South Korea or Japan will just – that's the end of North Korea under the Kim dynasty, period. So I think he's smart enough to understand that any type of aggressive military action will be met with an absolute destruction of North Korea.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of a game of chicken, and they're just upping the ante. But I'm not that scared about it.
Yeah, well, you know, chicken ends up in disaster a lot. We know that.
Or a nice dinner.
All right, I'll admit I'm scared. Rich, tell me why I shouldn't be scared.
Well, I think, look, you have a crazy guy who has access to nuclear weapons that it looks like he can deliver you know, a long way. And yes, I'm talking about the leader of North Korea, Joe, before you make a joke.
Well, we're not going to make a joke, but I am going to say that aren't we provoking the madman? Aren't we provoking the aren't we hitting the hornet's nest with needles?
No, I don't think we are. In fact, I think what we've done wrong over the last several administrations, Republican as well as Democrat, is, you know, we keep, you know, going back, you know, tying in Alan's point, I think we keep trying to deal with people like him and I will say regimes like Iran the way, you know, Kennedy dealt with the Russians. You know, Kennedy made that great speech where he said, you know, the Russians, you know, we still ultimately believe in the same things. You know, we want our children to grow up and have good lives. And the people we're dealing with do not believe those things now. Kim Jong-un doesn't believe in that. I don't believe a lot of the fundamentalists that we're dealing with believe in that. So I think that using that old philosophy of trying to work with them and placate them, it demonstrably has not worked.
Okay. And I'm sorry, Alan, but just real quick. Sure. But is verbal bullying a good approach? I mean, is that going to work? Is that going to...
There's probably 10 or 12 different pressure points, right? And diplomacy is one of them, and trade sanctions, mm-hmm. I think, ultimately, and I'll defer to the expert on economics, but I think trade sanctions or use of trade is ultimately going to be the thing that brings the pressure upon China. You know, there's military force, there's, you know, the buildups in South Korea, there's, you know, the THAAD missiles. And I think verbal jousting and posturing. And remember, the leader of North Korea is not in any way meant to be the recipient of any of this rhetoric. It's like Alan says, we're talking to China. We're talking to the other people in the North Korean regime and folks like that.
China's foreign policy is, securing its borders, so preventing any North Korean refugees from coming into China, but also non-intervention, that China just does not fundamentally believe that they should be involved in any nation's affairs, no matter what their records on human rights are. And they're pretty firm about that. China has its own objectives. And yeah, like Rich said, I think this is, you know, primarily directed towards China. But and this might be shocking for a lot of you to hear, that I really agree with Steve Bannon when he said there is no military solution to the North Korean problem. You would see conventional weapons, not even nuclear weapons, just aimed at Seoul, aimed at Tokyo, and that's a pretty big threat. Those are two staunch allies of the U.S.
I don't know that I disagree with that either, but that's not what the president is
saying. I understand that, but he says a lot of things. So,
one other thing: do you guys remember when they pulled Saddam Hussein out of the hole?
Yes,
remember that, and then they hung him. This has gotten to, I know that we're talking on three or four different levels here, intellectual levels, but I think it's incredibly personal with this guy. This is a guy who has his uncle executed, you know, and does all of those things. And he remembers, he knows what happens if we win this thing, and I mean win with quotation marks around it, that he's done, he's toast, he's gone, he's hung. And I think that he's thinking on that level, as well as this very intellectual, economic kind of thing that we've been talking about here. I think it's personal.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think the real scary next escalation, and again, I'm going to defer to Aaron on this, is let's say China does not comply to the extent we want them to, and I'm sure they will not comply to the extent we want them to. And then the question becomes, do we start actually moving some of our trade relationships away from China and say, all right, yeah, we sell a lot of stuff to them, but excuse me, we need to go a different place.
China accounts for like 90% of China funds about 90% of North Koreans' economic activity. So international banking restrictions, freezing assets on banks and businesses that do business with North Korea, excluding China, is not going to have any effect on what or how North Korea behaves. I mean, this is directly aimed at China. And I think Steve Mnuchin, by saying, well, this isn't, you know, aimed at Beijing in particular, is just lying about it. It is aimed at Beijing because that they're the ones who supply North Korea with their fuel and their, you know, the capital to fund their day-to-day operations. And if we don't start freezing assets of, you know, Chinese banks that are doing business with North Korea in some context, then it's just not going to be a solution. So this risks, you know, a cascade of possible a trade war with China, or, you know, specific sanctions aimed at China, and that could really upset the world economic balance.
See, I actually think that is something that they're talking about more at the White House. Is, you know, we always say that. And you know, yes, it will upset the world's economic balance. Yes, we have a huge, export imbalance with China. But then you start looking at the numbers and you say, all right, well, what are we really talking about? I mean, last year, I think we did $170 billion worth of kind of income. You know, we sold $170 billion worth of goods and services to China. You know, what if we weren't selling to them anymore? What if a large portion of that went to other places of interest? What if we started cultivating relationships in South America and Mexico and things like that? Yeah, I understand there'd be some upsettedness, but, you know, I think that's the calculus that really needs to be had. And then China will get serious.
And let's remember what the threat is here. What the United States has said, anybody who does business, and we, as you guys have pointed out quite correctly, the Chinese do business with North Korea. Anybody who does business can't do business in the United States. That's what this is about.
At what point, you know, I've been invoking your words quite a few times over the last couple of days, Alan, but, you know, so what do you do? I mean, if you're us and you try to figure out what you do, I mean, to Rich's point, which I think is a good one, look, we've been at this a really long time, and we haven't done the job. So what do we do now?
And wait, and it gets worse, because now, if I'm reading the papers correctly, or if I'm watching the TV, who remembers what I saw? Oxycodone will do that to you. Is that we're hearing that Kim is talking about exploding a hydrogen bomb in the atmosphere above the Pacific? What if he does that? As in terms of your what if, Joe, question.
Well, then that's the end game, right? Then he's
right.
done,
right.
And then we're done. And by the way, I don't think he has to wait that 18 minutes or whatever for those missiles to come from the United States. I think those missiles are going to come a lot closer than he thinks if that happens. I think China will take care of that.
That's interesting because it seems to me.
I got to hold you there, Alan. We just have a break and we'll come right back to this discussion, I promise. Alan Chartok is here. Rich Honan, Aaron Pasitti. We will be back and continue our conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to this Friday roundtable for the 22nd of September. Again, very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, Aaron Pasitti. And just a programming note, coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, Judith Enck will join us by telephone. She is in the state of California attending some climate meetings. She, of course, former regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, and part of her area, including New York and New Jersey, was Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. She has a lot of thoughts on what's happening as a result of Hurricane Maria and the dire situation that Puerto Rico is in. She will join us at the top of the hour, and we look forward to hearing from her. In the meantime, we do have some letters. We'll get to those. Get to these right now, and we welcome your letters, of course. Panel at WAMC.org. Annie says, Alan, this one's for you. Annie says, I've missed hearing Alan's voice and opinions. I hope that you recover quickly, Alan, and are full of your normal energy as soon as possible. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
Dan says, everywhere we turn, we're reminded that we're funnier on painkillers. Sure doesn't help those listening and in recovery see political correctness is everywhere. I think Alan was very cautious in that, and we weren't taking it funny, but whatever.
Well, no.
James says, if Trump nukes North Korea, in addition to the millions killed in the initial blast, many will die elsewhere from spreading nuclear fallout. The prevailing winds over North Korea vary by season. For half the year, late fall to early spring, the winds blow to the southwest and would carry the fallout to, among other places, South Korea, Japan, and many Pacific islands. The other half of the year, it's the reverse, blowing to the northwest, carrying death to China and parts of Russia. And we have a man-boy in charge of our nukes. Michael writes, one of the most dangerous aspects of this is that neither of these leaders have the empathy for their citizens. Their egos and lust for power eclipse all. Either of them can send missiles sailing and then that night lay their head on their pillow and sleep just fine. I think that may be a bit of a stretch, but okay. Marjorie writes, I woke up twice in the night last night in the terror that people we don't know can influence in any way have the power to destroy life as we know it. Just as the lives of people in the path of these horrible storms or living on top of a fault in the earth have their lives destroyed overnight. So might we find our peace and constructive line shattered by people whose values are so different from our own? I guess I'd have to say I am terrified and my sleep is troubled. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I have to say, I think I'm personally losing more sleep over healthcare than I am about North Korea, at least in the last couple nights.
That is a great point, Joe. I think they're going to do it. I think that they are going to take healthcare away from millions of Americans. They're going to bankrupt certain states like this one. Could well be New York State gets bankrupted in this. And I think under the guise of dealing with this international crisis, they're bringing it right up to the line. Lindsey Graham says he has the votes, and I don't see any reason to think he doesn't, because his best friend is obviously McCain. And if McCain goes the other way, that's the end of that.
And Murkowski, right? Murkowski would switch on this because of the value it could bring to Alaska, which right now is getting kind of under.
But even though her governor is very much against it and is putting much pressure on her. And I'm just wondering as to, you know, with a figurative gun to their head as far as a deadline by next, what, Friday? Saturday, I guess. That, you know, can you pull it all together in that period of time, in a week? And it won't be scored. A lot of people won't know. I mean, look at the groups that have come out against it. And where are we in that? Because there's a lot about this we still don't know.
Well, there's a lot about it that the bill itself doesn't know, right? I mean, the bill basically says, so let's just give the states some money and let them try and fix it.
Well, yeah, that's right, but it's throwing it into the states. But meanwhile, then what do you do? I mean, we don't know what the gap plan is. We don't know, and the states are many of the governors are crying foul, saying, well, we're not in a position to do this, and you can say, well, you know, under this, in theory, your rate shouldn't rise, but you can't guarantee that, especially when the states don't know what they're up against.
Isn't there something called the right thing? Way before Spike Lee, I knew this lady, Ethel Pearls, who used to say to her son, just do the right thing. You know, I mean, honestly, how can you take away health care from millions and millions and millions of Americans and not care about it? It's just beyond anything I can understand. It's part of it is apparently, Rich, maybe you could speak to this. I know you say you're not a Republican, but it's just part of we have to do this because we're Republicans. Hey, what about what's right?
Well, I think the Republican response would be what's right, first of all, is trying to have a plan that you can actually pay for and not keep pushing down the road. And what's right is also have a plan that actually works, which by any objective measure, Obamacare is not working. And to Joe's point, I think we know just as much or just as little about this plan as we did about Obamacare when it was passed on Christmas Eve or whenever it was. And we learned a lot about it afterwards.
They'd been debating that particular plan for 4 years.
Yeah, and for years.
This plan came out of the vapors, and we're not even going to get a score on it. There are the only hearing that's been taking place is is in Homeland Security, and the only two people going are the sponsors of the bill. I mean, how does that work? How is that democracy? Is that a sixth of the let's ask Aaron. A sixth of the U.S. economy, is going to be shuffled as a result of this bill. Should we not take a little more time instead of having again a figurative gun to our head and say we have to get it done by a week from today?
This is what I never understood about. I mean, I understand why Republicans might want a different healthcare system than the American or the ACA, but the rush on this makes that all but impossible. You know, it took Massachusetts 4 years to come up to develop and get RomneyCare going. Obamacare took 4+ years to get off the ground. So to expect states to be able to do this on their own in 2 years, it's just going to be something of a disaster.
Well, and the whole thing about pre-existing conditions and all of the unknowns, they keep on saying, well, no, if it's up to the states, if they want to do that, they can do that. But we know what the fiscal realities are going to be. If the block money that you're giving them isn't enough money, as Alan said, especially even the states, the blue states, especially like New York,
yep.
then yeah, the premiums are going to go up. Those people aren't going to be covered, and we are going to be screwed.
Then New York State, you know, should think twice before it gloms on to every entitlement that comes down the pike in New York State and the other three states that get what, Aaron, 40%, 50% of all the Obamacare entitlements. Maybe they should think a little bit harder about how to structure their plans more effectively.
Hey, Rich, we are so glad you're here with us this morning, really.
That usually precedes the knife in the back, so go ahead.
So important.
That's right up there with all due respect.
You are. Yeah. I want to point out, though, that if 23 million Americans, and we don't even know how many because, as it's been said here, aren't scored, are going to be deprived of their health care, Rich, I'm going to bet that you have all the health care you need or that you can pay for. And that's what really all of this comes down to. All of this, we can't afford it and all this stuff. It really does. It really is crocodile tears as far as I'm concerned.
Alan, you don't have any empirical evidence that those people are getting any better health care than they were before. And we know empirically how much more money we're spending. No, you know how many people are signed up. And as far as
who never had health care, the emergency rooms couldn't handle them. That's for sure.
Well, they did have health care. They went to the emergency rooms and they had Medicare and Medicaid,
which raises costs for everybody else.
I agree.
So, you know, I mean, it's do you shoot costs through the roof or do you at least keep them somewhat more contained than they would otherwise be?
You do the latter by having some type of, you know, reasoned discussion and have some type of preventative. And I've said this before on this show. I certainly understand the idea of, I'll call it a bare bones and Alan will get all upset, but, you know, some kind of baseline plan that needs to be provided for everybody. I understand that. Obamacare, we all know, went well beyond that, and it's unaffordable.
And we have a president of the United States who is doing everything in his power to screw it all up. He says, but I'm going to have all kinds of directives which are going to make it harder and harder for this program to work.
Sure, that's what he ran on.
And Rich, my bet is you know that.
That's what he ran on. This is not a surprise.
Well, okay, then that's okay then, right? He got 3 million votes less than the other candidate. He says, this is what the American, this is what I ran on, and this is why I won. He didn't win. He got less votes by a lot.
Well, he won in the sense that he's the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right.
But the question is, Rich, just, I mean, do you... This is not the best plan we can come up with. Do you agree with that?
The current one or the proposed? Well, I think neither. First of all,
Cassidy Graham.
I agree that the current proposal is not the best one we could come up with. I think that the one that we're living under now is not the best one we can come up with. I've said before.
But can you make Obamacare? Wouldn't it? Okay, so if we wait till after Friday, where we don't have to go for a simple majority of 50 over 50%, and wait after that, where it's 60 votes, and God forbid you get input from Democrats to work on a plan that would solve some of these integral problems, isn't that a better solution?
You think you're going to get input from Chuck Schumer? Seriously? You think you're going to get input from Nancy
Pelosi? Well, I didn't think he'd be sitting. I didn't think he'd be sitting on the Oval Office couch last week, yeah. But there he was.
But you think you're going to get input from the woman who said, "I guess you're going to have to pass the plant to see what's in it." You think you're going to get input from the people who derive from the administration that
they're saying the same thing now, Rich. You can't use that. They're saying the same thing now.
I agree.
The Republicans are saying the exact same thing now. We don't know what this is. We have no idea. We'll throw it down to the states, and they'll do their best job.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that that's not. I don't like either plan. Okay, I don't like the current ACA. I don't love the proposal. I think the proposal's better. Because I like having people actually having to deal with their own money and their own issues. I like that better.
But if you throw 20 to 30 million people off health care, how is that good?
You're not throwing 20 or 30 million people off of health care. First of all, those CBO numbers just come down to the fact that the CBO said, well, if people don't have to buy health care, then they're not going to buy health care. If the CBO was scoring immigration, they would say there's no such thing as illegal immigration next year will be zero because people aren't allowed to come in illegally. That's how the CBO scores things.
Well, not quite. They make very reasoned assumptions about how things work. They were reasonably accurate with the Affordable Care Act. They overestimated how many people would gain insurance. But the problem is that they haven't even gotten a chance to look at the Cassidy Graham bill. And the biggest issue with this, independent of the politics, I think, obviously, because I'm an economist, is the economics. And when you replace Medicaid funding with block grants, and those block grants are going to be lower than what they would get under the Medicaid expansion, there's going to be less spending on health services. The other important point about this plan is that the block grants can be used on any type of health care, not just providing insurance.
Right.
So if those grants have much more flexibility and they don't necessarily need to provide insurance to the uninsured, then the number of uninsured is probably going to go up.
Yeah.
There's no mandate that says these grants have to be spent on providing health insurance to uninsured individuals. It can be spent on any health services.
This is an analogy. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything except now that you've given me the chance, I'm going to. There is a false equivalency in Rich's argument, obviously, saying, I don't like either plan. Well, excuse me, one plan throws 30 million or 25 or 23 million people off of health care who have never had it before, and I don't care what he says. There is no two ways about that. And they don't go to the emergency rooms, and we all know about that. And there's no health. You can't bring your kids for regular checkups and the rest of it. Please. It just is very disheartening, Rich, to hear you talking like that. I think you know better. And so I'm very concerned about your rhetoric over this.
You know, we have to go to a break, but the one thing that I thought was interesting, I think it was Trevor Noah showing Paul Ryan saying, hey, look, why should all of the well people pay for the sick people? And they said, well, you know, you don't talk about this when you pay your taxes for your fire department. I mean, you're not just going to say that only the people who have fire should pay for that. It doesn't make sense. Obviously, the people who are going to look at it and say, We are all in this together. We're going to have. I mean, that's what insurance is, right? I mean, it's for right. If you need. That's what insurance is.
But we already do it. I agree. Well, first of all, the analogy is not so much for the analogy is the correct analogy would be the one for the person who waits to buy fire insurance until after their house burns down, and then they say, "Well, why is it more expensive?"
I'm not even
for me?
Talking about the fire insurance. I'm talking about fire. I'm just talking about paying to have a fire company.
That's
in
not
your
based
town.
On a per occurrence thing. That's based on a residency thing, and that's why we all share in it. My point is, we all share. In it, whether you call it the tax base or whether you call it the increased cost of premiums, there's a big portion of that already baked in.
We spend twice as much as any other industrialized country on healthcare and don't get better outcomes. And I just don't understand why we don't look to other countries for some type of model. And if we did, we would have Bernie Sanders' plan, which is Medicaid for all.
All right. Let's take a break. We will when we come back, we have a lot of letters, so we'll get to those. We have Alan Chartok, Rich Hone, and Aaron Pasitti. We welcome your calls, your letters, actually. We don't want your calls. We want your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. All right, we have a lot of letters. Let's get to those before we have to take another break at the top of the hour, and then we're going to welcome Judith Henk and talk a little bit about what's been going on in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean. Kathleen writes, "Hey, Rich, slow down. You just casually and even lightheartedly referred to China or the U.S. killing almost everyone in North Korea. That's a horrible outcome. It's not something to talk about so lightly."
Yeah, I thought it was a horrible outcome when Obama made the exact same statement a year ago.
Everett says, "Why do we make the assumption that the world will continue to revolve around the dollar? We are becoming the rogue nation. China is already establishing major world trade pacts with countries excluding the U.S. If we begin shutting other countries out of dealing with us, with our U.S. first, we will be standing alone." Greg says, "I agree with Alan that diplomacy and negotiations in the Cuban Missile Crisis played a greater role. The reason I think Cuba was scarier than Korea, Cuba would have been mutually assured destruction. Korea will be unilaterally assured destruction. Kim will wreak havoc on East Asia, but ultimately I think only he will be completely wiped out. I hope somehow a peaceful settlement is reached." Sheila says, "Let's remember that economic, political, and moral power has been in transition for a couple of decades. So when Joe says that the U.S. has done nothing about the burgeoning power of North Korea, it's simply that smaller countries cannot be pushed around as they used to be." I don't know if I said that, but okay. Bill says, "Donald Trump kept harping on the security risk caused by a private server. Has anyone ever looked into the risk caused by Donald Trump maintaining an Android mobile device that may be completely secure and from which he tweets continually? Doesn't every tweet publicly reveal his device's IP address? Isn't that a bullseye for hackers?"
Possibly. I mean, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Got me. I don't know. Mike, as you discuss leveraging China regarding North Korea, aren't we forgetting that China could cripple our economy by simply threatening to sell U.S. treasuries?
No.
Why would they do that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that would hurt China as much as it would hurt the U.S., so they would never do that.
Maybe more.
Susan says a trade war in China...
Yeah.
Let it be known. A trade war with China could prompt them to call in their massive loans to the U.S. and destroy us. Maggie says, "Can someone explain how the Senate is allowed to proceed with a vote on the health care bill without a CBO score?" Well, they don't have to have it, right?
Yeah, they don't have to have it, but the CBO score does help Congress make more informed decisions about what they're voting on.
But
it's not a requirement.
Yeah, if you don't want an informed decision, then you don't wait for it.
The Kaiser Foundation has a preliminary estimate, and I think it's 32 million people to lose insurance. Healthcare spending would go down by $160 billion relative to what's happening today. They're probably basing that estimate on a similar basis to what the CBO would do, but the CBO is the gold standard in terms of these things.
And I believe the CBO is headed by a Republican, by the way.
Yeah.
Susan says, "How can we get the message out to Trump's base about the horrible truth of Graham Cassidy bill when they get their information from Fox News alone?"
The silver lining to the Graham Cassidy bill is that if it actually does go through, you're going to have a lot of unhappy low-income people, the white working middle class who lose insurance, and that might do some very damaging things to Republicans since it would be 2 years, it would be the 2020 election.
I don't know. I just don't know. It doesn't seem that with all of those threats to this program that there's been any major movement among the middle-class Republicans in this country. They're with Trump. And by the way, while I'm on the subject, can I just say we get a lot of mail, negative mail, about having Rich on the show. Nevertheless, and frankly, I find Rich infuriating in so many ways. Nevertheless, you got a president of the United States.
Yeah, it's good to be back, isn't it, Rich? Go ahead.
Yeah, you got a president of the United States who is closer to Rich. You got a Congress of the United States which is about to obliviate health care. And it's very important to have this voice on, even if we don't agree with it.
Martin says, "Alan, since when has the GOP cared about what's right? They only care about making people richer and undoing Obama's legacy. The irony is in this disaster is that the poor red states will get tons more money, which comes from from wealthier blue states. Boy, that sure sounds like welfare to me."
Wait. That sounds like I was espousing the Republican position. I was yelling, do what's right, don't do what's wrong, and they're about to do what's wrong.
Rich, do you think health care is a right or a privilege?
Privilege.
Okay. Connie knows now. Matthew says, as a physician, I can tell you categorically that I have many patients that now have Medicaid or insurance that previously did not. They're getting medication and care they previously did not. I can provide data on scores of patients that are better off, as in lower glucose levels, lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure. This coming from a professor of medicine. Also, Robert says, it is not about health care. It's about funding tax cuts for the wealthy. Do you want to take on that argument, Rich? Because that's certainly been said much on the show over the last week.
Oh, I agree with that.
Okay. Eric says, Rich's comment that Obamacare was a failure by all metrics is patently false because it fails to realize or acknowledge they covered 30 million uninsured people. That is a huge success. It also slowed the growth of costs to the lowest increase rates in decades. The block grants will simply transfer money to all states that didn't embrace exchanges or Obamacare instead of the ones that did be intellectually honest.
Will somebody please find the number, which I believe is about 2 million, of the people who before Obamacare did not have health care or access to health care of any kind, who then had it afterwards. A great mass of people. First of all, of the people they're talking about, half of them were, many of them were people who lost their plans as a result of Obamacare, and then had to, which we were told wasn't going to happen, and then a lot of it, and I think this is good, by the way, a lot of what Obamacare did was actually make people aware of the things that were available to them, and so there were lots of people who actually had health care available to them beforehand who were not taking advantage of it, which by the way, I think that is a good thing.
I mean, one of the big benefits of Obamacare, in addition to covering more people who didn't have insurance, is that it has pushed the rate of healthcare inflation down substantially.
From a huge baseline, though, Aaron.
Well, that's where it started, and it's going down. So, I mean, it either goes up or it goes down. And would you rather see it go up? Would you rather see people spend more money on healthcare with more uninsured people, or would you rather see healthcare costs go down with more people covered with insurance?
The problem is a lot of the increase in that rate base went up while we were talking about Obamacare in preparation for that.
And now it's gone down after it's been implemented.
No, it's never gone down. The rate of increase has gone down.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So we're paying less more than we were before.
All right. With that, we're going to take a break. Ray's ready to do news. We'll be back. We will continue our conversation. As I mentioned, Judith Henk, former EPA regional administrator who oversaw not only the U.S. Virgin Islands but also Puerto Rico. We'll talk about the disaster that is happening in that region, especially the images coming out of Puerto Rico are just so troublesome. We'll talk about that and much more when we return right after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Rich Honan, Aaron Pasidi, and we also welcome to our airwaves Judith Henk, a former regional administrator from the Environmental Protection Agency. And Judith would normally be with us on Friday. She's in California, flying out of California this morning. And we asked her if she'd come on and talk a little bit about what's going on in Puerto Rico, because it's a troubling situation. The images over the last, say, 36 hours that have come out of Puerto Rico are especially grim and awful. So, and I know that this is an area and a subject close to Judith's heart. So, Judith, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good morning, Joe.
Good
panel.
Good morning. All right. So, when you look at where we are right now in the situation, the question seems to be when, not a matter of days or weeks, but of months, when Puerto Rico will once again have power. And I guess that leads because everything is sort of based on that, right?
Yeah, if you don't have electricity, it's hard to live your daily life. And then on top of that, you need electricity to run all the water pumps at the sewage treatment plants. So they are not currently running. So all that flood water is contaminated with pathogens and bacteria from sewage. And there will be a drinking water problem because, again, the public utility that runs the drinking water system relies on electricity. You can't send your kids to school if they're even standing. And most of the cell towers are down on Puerto Rico, about 90%. So residents are having a hard time communicating. And, you know, the list goes on and on. This is an unprecedented disaster in Puerto Rico. And the question is, you know, the immediate goal is to just take care of people physically. I think they've not even really begun the search and rescue efforts. Get people food and water, probably get people out of there, especially if they're in compromised health conditions or older residents, little babies. And then just take it day by day and figure out how to deal with this. But this is, I think, the most daunting situation that's ever faced the islands, where 3.5 million Americans live. So it's just really hard for me to communicate how devastating this is.
I want to get to the Americans part in just a second. Before we do that, though, it is, from what I understand, though, in looking at this situation and reading about it, there was a government official who was on NPR yesterday who said that from now on it will always be before Maria and after Maria, that those will be that Puerto Rico will never be the same again. And you go back to its earlier days where basically you were starting the country, and that's pretty much what you're doing now, starting over.
Yeah, and I think that's true. And Puerto Rico was in pretty rough shape even pre-Maria. The electrical power grid was very, very shaky. And so once, you know, we deal with the health and human life issues, getting the power back on, which, you know, the estimate is 4 to 6 months. My sense is it will be longer than that. The system is a mess. And unlike in Florida and Texas, where gratefully you saw these convoys of utility trucks from other states rushing down to help residents there to get power restored, you can't have a convoy of trucks coming to a tropical island. And I don't mean to be harsh, but the PREPA, the public utility that's in place there, is not particularly competent or efficient. So I think it's going to be longer than 6 months without electricity.
So the issue that you just brought up, and as I said, I wanted to get back to talking about the Americans on the island, of course. But the issue that you just talked about of you're not going to see the convoys coming in, what I have heard and what we've seen in our email, and Alan and I get this a lot over the last couple of days, is that we've been very quick to talk about helping Houston. We've been very quick to talk about helping Florida. And yet there does seem to be a disconnect between Puerto Rico, even though it is a part of the United States, it is not a state. Do you feel that way, or do you feel that we are doing as at this moment as much as we possibly can for our fellow Americans?
I don't think we're doing enough. The president has not traveled there. Remember, you know, the short history of these hurricanes is first we had Irma that devastated St. Thomas and St. John and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And then a week later, Maria devastated St. Croix and Puerto Rico. The president has said he's going to go there. I think it's interesting that Governor Cuomo is traveling there today. He's already been to the U.S. Virgin Islands. The president hasn't been there. The president has to go there. He has to see the devastation because politically, because Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands don't have U.S. senators, they have delegates, or in Puerto Rico, it's called a resident commissioner, who are in the House but don't vote on the floor. they don't have the political clout that, say, a large state like Texas or Florida has. So I'm very concerned about the level of federal resources that will be made available. I'm grateful that FEMA is going there or has been on the ground. So it's kind of a combination of geography and their political status that makes me very concerned about whether there will be federal dollars to help these American territories. So, and then you lay on top of that the fact that in both territories, the number one economic driver is tourism. Well, no one will be vacationing there anytime soon. And so everyone who worked in the hospitality industry, not everyone, but most people will lose their jobs. They'll probably become construction jobs, but it's a long way to go from being a waitress or, you know, someone who works at the golf course to actually, you know, doing heavy duty construction work. So, you know, the future is perilous for these people. And I'm skeptical that there will be enough federal resources to really rebuild in an effective way there.
Alan? So let me, if I may, ask you a question here, Judith. We know that Puerto Rico is on the verge, has been on the verge of bankruptcy itself for quite a while, number one. Number two, we've had many elections in which, you know, the status that the Puerto Rico has, the Commonwealth, has been upheld, but not by that much. Do you think at this stage of the game this could upset the politics of statehood for Puerto Rico?
Yes, I do. And I was very happy to serve on President Obama's task force on Puerto Rico, which a couple other presidents had. It was a task force on status. Should Puerto Rico be a state, a commonwealth, independence? And all presidents have said, you know, the first step is for the residents of Puerto Rico to vote. And the last few votes, it's been like 50-50. You know, unbelievably exactly. Close with statehood not getting the nod. I think, you know, I am not expressing a personal position on what it should be, but I think the dynamic dramatically changed once Maria hit. Now, and it's not, Alan, it's not just a matter of the residents voting. It then has to go to the Congress. And
absolutely.
So there's,
I was just about to make that point, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not sure this Congress will be welcoming Puerto Rico as a state.
That, you know, even with Hawaii and Alaska, you had to have a Republican and a Democratic place. I can't think of a particular Republican place that is asking for statehood at this stage of the game. So I would assume you're right about that.
It does.
Yeah, that was even before the hurricane.
Right.
It does seem, though, in the last 24, 36, even 42 hours, 48 hours, that the images that have come out that have been so compelling and so disturbing, do you think that that will change some public opinion and put people to galvanize them and help move along some efforts? Because it really is, you know, we were in a bit of a blackout there, as you mentioned, because it was difficult with even to get cell phone coverage and to see images. But now we're starting to see those images, and they are horrible. They are frightening. And I just wonder if that will, I'm not saying it's not going to solve any problem, but certainly help grease the wheels a little bit.
Yeah, I think it will galvanize public support. I mean, you know, people are always puzzled about Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. When I was at EPA and my friends and colleagues would sometimes hear that I was traveling down there, they would always kind of snicker and, oh, yeah, you're just going down there because it's a beautiful tropical island. There's terrible poverty in both territories. And I actually did spend a disproportionate amount of time in Puerto Rico, not as much in the U.S. Virgin Islands, because Puerto Rico has 3.5 million Americans, Virgin Islands, 100,000 Americans, really daunting environmental problems, much harder than what I was working on in New York and New Jersey. So So just to be clear,
just to be clear, Judith, that was in your district. Puerto Rico was part of your district. Yes.
Yes, yes. Puerto Rico, and it's kind of weird. For many federal agencies, the way they're structured is, so I had New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And the thing about Puerto Rico that the former governor would always say, and was true, is a little bit of work went a long way in Puerto Rico. So EPA was very engaged on water quality issues, cleaning up the island of Vieques, remember that, which used as a bombing range for 60 years. That's now loaded with unexploded ordnance. I'm worried a lot of that went into the sea. I helped establish recycling in Puerto Rico. It seems so kind of quaint now. Serious air quality problems. Their only source of power there is they have a fleet of really old oil-fired power plants. Very little solar, very little wind. And what will be interesting in working on rebuilding is what I learned from Hurricane Sandy is FEMA rules are pretty arcane. They will only provide funding to bring the infrastructure back to where it was before. So, for instance, FEMA won't fund solar and wind in the Caribbean unless solar and wind was damaged by the storm. What they will fund is rebuilding these old oil-fired power plants and the electrical grid. So I've already been on the phone with members of Congress trying to make the case that rebuilding that old power grid back to where it was prior to the storm makes absolutely no sense. And so when Congress does the supplemental bill to fund this hurricane recovery, we have to get some changes in the way FEMA funds restoration.
I want to get back to real quick as we wrap up here, but I want to get back to obviously as part of the EPA. I mean, we are talking about the environmental impacts here. And so it is safe to say, as we have been talking, Judith, over the last several weeks, as a result of Irma, as a result of Harvey in Texas and in Florida, we still really have no idea as to what those environmental impacts are going to be yet, do we?
We have a partial picture, but we don't understand the long-term impacts because there are so many facilities that released hazardous materials during the storm, and there's not been enough sampling and monitoring. I mean, I know that in Texas, people who were in those storm waters, a lot of them have shown up at local hospitals with rashes and skin diseases. Respiratory issues are also always a concern. I mean, I worked on Sandy, and we didn't really have a full understanding of the environmental impact until a few months afterwards. And that's, you know, in states like New York and New Jersey, and where I had easy access to the EPA lab in New Jersey. For these storms, it is definitely going to take some time.
Well, Judith, thank you very much for being with us. I know you're in the airport, you're coming home, and we look forward to having you back next week. Travel safe, and thank you very much for sharing
Thanks,
with
Joe.
Us. Appreciate it.
Great, I appreciate it. See you next Friday. Take care.
Thank you very much. Alan, any comments on that or anything else before we wrap up here?
Well, I do think that one of the reasons this program is so valuable to so many people is that they get a lot of different perspectives here. That's what this program should be. We can make people angry. Either I can or Rich can or you can. But in the end, there are more people listening to this program now than we can possibly believe. Somebody told me the other day that there is many people listening, and I have to check this one out, to the panel as during drive time to Morning Edition. So congratulations, Joe. You've made a great success out of this.
Well, congratulations to you. Let me ask, Rich, what do you think when you look at any parting thoughts? What are you going to be looking over the next week? What is Rich Honan concerned about over the next week?
Well, I'm going to see where this health care bill goes, regardless of where you stand on it. I think Alan usually has a pretty good sense. He tends to be more dire about it, but Alan has a pretty good sense. And if Alan thinks this thing could squeak through, I could kind of see a confluence of circumstances where I could kind of see that happening.
Well, a lot has to happen in a week, though. I don't disagree with you, but
they
I just said a lot.
Congress only works under deadlines, right?
Well, just count the votes.
Yeah.
That's the point here. Count the votes. If McCain goes over the line.
If they got McCain, they got Murkowski.
If that happens,
they might have Collins.
Yeah.
But there's still question about even having the votes in the House.
No, Joe, the House is an autocracy. It's under the command of one guy. That's the problem. It was supposed to be the House that was closer to the people. Turns out, Ryan is the boss. And if he says it goes, it's going to go. So it's the Senate, which we really have to watch.
Aaron.
This is going to be interesting, and it's particularly in the House to see how the competing Republican factions are going to either coalesce or further diverge on this. And that's really tough to forecast.
But Aaron, how do they got to be thinking, how do we ever do tax cuts or tax reform without without rolling back the Medicaid expansion that they need to do in this one, right? That they're thinking to the next one, right?
Yep, that's what it's about.
Most likely, yeah.
So that's the driver.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here. I appreciate it. Very nice to have you. And I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Alan, thank you very much. Good to hear your voice. Rich, good to have you back as well. Aaron, we won't see you next week. We'll see you the week after.
That's correct.
Excellent. We'll be back right after this.